Hello, Guts.
Griffith!
Yes, it's me. It's good to see you, old friend. Look, I know we've had our differences, but now we're trapped down here together in the Hall of Pain. I thought it was time we let bygones be bygones.
Casca!
Yes, I imagine you're still a bit sore about that. But look on the bright side. Down here we've got loads of potential new recruits for the Band of the Hawk. Those gremlins have a lot of personality, and Michael and Jason seem like they'd make good, sturdy warriors. Not sure about that Slender Man, though.
You make me sick!
Oh, come on, Guts, don't bear a grudge. Look, I've got something I want to talk to you about anyway. As you know, we were featured in Dark Natter a couple of episodes ago, where John and Liam described in excruciating detail the horrors we both went through. Torture, demonic possession, dismemberment, slaughter, sexual abuse. I can confidently say it was the darkest episode of the podcast yet. Wouldn't you agree?
Pippin. Judo. Ricket.
Exactly my point. It seems to me that their harrowing, gore-soaked deaths couldn't possibly be matched for pure, repulsive, sickening awfulness. And yet, I've heard that today's guest is carrying a listener warning.
I'll wipe you from the face of the earth, you monster!
Now, let's not get too carried away just yet. But I thought we ought to research this guest if they're really so repugnant that listeners might be even more offended than by our own vile antics. Apparently it's a set of graphic novels, so I bought myself a copy. Why don't we have a look together?
Preacher?
Yes, that's right. Preacher. What could possibly be so abhorrent about a nice story about a man of the cloth? Let's open it and find out. Oh my. Oh my goodness.
No. That's too horrible.
It's making me feel physically ill, but I can't look away.
No. Don't look at it.
My eyes. My beautiful eyes.
Casca.
Enjoyed that. I thought that was good. What did you
think?
Good.
I liked it. Yeah.
Should we stick with that, or do you want to do it the other way?
I'm happy with that.
I reckon we just
can try it the other way if you want.
So entirely up to you. I reckon we just go with that. That'll do. I think you did a good Guts impression.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it. Right, hang on. Let's get me notes. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Dark Natter, the podcast where we.
Very good.
Thanks, thank you. I thought you'd like that one. I'm John Richter.
And I'm Liam Martin.
And we are here, as always, to discuss a particular work of dark fiction and decide whether it merits a place in the hallowed, horrible, hideous halls of the Hall of Pain.
Casca.
Recycled. You got some pressure there. That's good.
I did. Yeah.
Good callback. I enjoyed fun little skit there. Did you enjoy that one?
I'm eating again.
You always are. I just assume that would be the case. What are you? Is this? I can hear the sound. Wait. Let me go on. I'm going to guess. I can hear the sound of a rustling packet, but I'm not hearing the crunch of crisps.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that's in a packet, but it's not crisp. Unless it's Pringles and you're eating them in like a disgusting way where you're letting them like sort of melt rather than chewing. I'll go with that. I'll go with sour cream and chive Pringles.
Licorice all sorts.
Do you only eat sweets from the past?
No.
It was wine gums last time, which are like, what were they?
It was, yeah.
They were invented in like the 1890s or something.
I think... Well, you see, it was my birthday recently, and I got a packet for my birthday.
Oh, you got
got a pack of all sorts. And any, have you turned into Bertie the All Sorts Man as a result? Like on the advert?
Well, funny you should say that, because that is the subject of this week's Dark Natter episode, Bertie Bassett.
Very good. Well, that renders our intro a bit defunct then, that swerve. But okay, well, let's go with that, Bertie Bassett. What's his backstory?
Well, he's a man made of sweets.
There was a Doctor Who episode, you remember when Sylvester McCoy was Doctor Who?
Not like it was yesterday, but
there was.
I know of him, yeah.
I remember watching an episode when I was very young, and it had a sort of a Licorice All Sorts Man style villain in it. And I remember being really scared. So as a little kid, I had Doctor Who sweets based villain. I had Bertie Bassett in the adverts. I had the Soft Mints. You remember that, Mr. Soft?
Oh, yeah.
Fucking scary as well. I'm surprised I don't really eat sweets that much. That's probably why.
No, you don't. See, I don't really remember any of them. So hence why I gorge myself silly every recording.
Oh, but it is your birthday, though. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Did you get up to out good?
No, well, we're recording this during what we hope is the final phase of lockdown, so no, not really.
Everyone's getting vaccinated and whatnot, aren't they? So it's early March at the time of recording, so yeah, hopefully in a couple of months everything's back up and running and open. And I have to go for a test tomorrow. There's been a notification in our local area that there's an outbreak of whatever variant, and we're all being encouraged to. And I'm dreading it. I have to put the big probe in me gob, and oh no,
It's horrible. Yeah,
I'm dreading it. But anyway, I need to grow a pair. What would Preacher say? Oh wait.
Well, we should probably mention that Bertie Bassett isn't actually this week's subject. It's Preacher, the graphic novel / TV show created by Garth Ennis.
It is indeed.
Ennis? Ennis?
Well, to be honest, Ennis probably works better given the content, doesn't it? Rhyming with... yeah, this is your pitch, your turn to pitch, Liam, and you've gone for Preacher, which is a set of graphic novels, comics, as you say, ran from 1995 to 2000, written by Garth Ennis, drawn by Steve Dillon, and featuring painted covers by Glenn Fabry. And we might cover the TV series as well that ran from 2016 to 2019 in a bit. But this Preacher is a thing that I remember. Like, we've known each other for nearly 20 years.
Wow.
Which is depressing for everyone.
Very depressing. Yeah.
And I remember you telling me about, like, you've always been a source of recommendations to me. Like, it was you who got me into Dark Souls. It was you who got me into drugs. It was you who got me into burglary. And you
serial killing.
Serial killing. Oh yeah, we haven't dusted that one off for a while.
That was our original skit, wasn't
it? Yeah, you were a murderer in our original. I forgot. Those were the nostalgia when we used to do this face to face.
Yeah. Prefer it now, to be honest.
Yeah.
You have to look at your ugly mug.
And you can eat as well. I can't stop you from eating your beloved sweets.
I used to drink, didn't I? That's like I've regressed. When we started doing this, it was sort of boozing and talking, and now I'm just eating sweets and getting like a sugar high. So,
well, as long as you're getting some sort of enjoyment, because you won't get it from talking to me, obviously.
Hey, I'll be sucking a dummy next.
You make me feel a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's lucky you're not here.
Whatever you're doing your own time.
Don't think we'd be able to look at each other.
Interest us like a giant, like George Dawes. Sorry.
Yeah.
This could well be. Babies, this would be like the plot of a Preacher comic,
it could
it?
Be actually, yeah.
Well, so yeah, what I was badly trying to articulate is that I remember you banging on about Preacher ages ago and me thinking, oh, I should check that out, and then I never did. And then, and obviously you suggested it as your pick, and then you foisted upon me a massive stack of every single comic, well, in 9 volumes, some huge towering pile of Preacher graphic novels, and I thought, oh bollocks, I have to read all of this. Oh, maybe I'll read a few of them, and then I got dead into it and read them all. So yeah, good, well done.
And I actually wanted them out of my house in case my son happened upon them, because as we'll discuss momentarily, it's pretty dark, isn't it?
It's I mean, I'm going all in on this one. I'm saying, well, spoiler alert first for Preacher, but also a content alert. I mean, you're listening to a podcast called Dark Natter where we talk about dark stuff, so you're obviously not expecting it to be like, you know, kid friendly, but Jesus, I don't even know how we're going to begin to discuss this without offending and alienating every single listener we've got, because some of the stuff in Preacher is, it's just, it's, what's the word we're looking for? What, willfully offensive, shall we say? Yeah. I made like a I made a note of like everything we had to apologise for, and it's running on. You know, it's like blasphemy, sadism, you know, extreme violence, drug abuse, a bloke with an arse for a face. I just ran out. I ran out of steam after a while.
Probably ran out of ink.
Yeah, ran out of
There's that many. Yeah.
I couldn't. Yeah, whoa, I was shocked to me core, but in a kind of in a good way. Do you want to explain what the premise of Preacher is?
Well, actually, I think you've actually read it more recently than I have. So by all means, just you give a summary, because you're probably going to mention bits today that I was like, shit, I forgot about that. Like, not even forgot, I blocked that bit out.
You've had therapy to get rid of it. Oh, yeah, so it might be worth mentioning to the listeners. So I've read
Let me just say before we start, so I read this probably before I met you, actually, like maybe a year or two before we actually met. So it was been a long time since I read it. And yeah, I was like, you know, late teens, early 20s. I can't remember exactly when, but yeah, I just remember being like, fuck this. I've never read anything like this before, you know, and not since. So it has been a long time since I read it, but I didn't even know what point I was trying to make, to be honest.
But you've watched this.
What was I trying to say?
Well, I think you were trying to say you haven't reread it. So, you're probably rusty on the content of the novels, whereas they're fresh in my now ruined, blackened mind.
Yes.
Whereas you've been watching the TV series, which I couldn't be asked to watch because I watched the first episode and thought it was a bit shit. But
we'll get to that.
But see, it's interesting. I mean, if nothing else, it's an ambitious project to adapt for modern day television, a series that is so offensive that there's absolutely no way I would think that you could make it. So good on them for managing it, and it ran for four seasons. But maybe in the translation, it also became a bit crap. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
You have a go.
Preacher is in effect a superhero. He is a preacher. He's a Texan. What's the word? He's not washed up. He's like, he's still relatively young and, you know, very handsome and, you know, sort of appealing specimen of a man. But he's very jaded, I think is the word I'm looking for. He's fed up of being a preacher. He's lost his faith in God. He thinks all the townsfolk in the town of Anvil, which is kind of a funny pun, Anvil. He thinks they're all, you know, cretins and the most of them are not worth preaching to. And then one day he's addressing his congregation and a spiritual force blasts into the church and enters him. And we learn that this is a force called Genesis, which is a sort of heavenly celestial creature that whose origins we will get onto. But the power that it gives to him is the power to use the word of God to literally compel people to do whatever he says to them. That's his power.
Yeah.
And there's loads of fun you could have with that. Loads of stories you could tell with that power. And it's kind of cool. But they don't really use it that much. Most of the story is about him trying to confront God himself, because Preacher decides God needs to answer for why he's, you know, seemingly abdicated his responsibilities and left the world to go to rack and ruin. And he's going to use the word to compel God to speak the truth. And on the way, he encounters a cast of unbelievable, just bonkers, ridiculous nutters, basically, who will go through. But, and he uses the word to compel. There's one, I think, where he says to some bloke, he's like, he needs to get rid of him. So he's like, count every grain of sand on this beach. And then the poor guy is like, disappears for about five volumes of comics, literally counting every grain of sand on a beach, slowly aging and going mad. I remember one where he tells a bloke to go and fuck himself, and the guy dies of blood loss from his severed penis that he's jammed up his own ass. So that's great.
Jeez.
That happens to, anyway, yes, one of the unpleasant, he wasn't a very nice character, to be fair.
No.
And I think he could have interpreted that instruction differently. I wouldn't necessarily have gone to those extremes.
Could have masturbated, maybe. Or...
Yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah. Although I wouldn't necessarily have wanted to see that depicted in a comic. Oh, God, yeah. My eyes feel like they've been scarred. My retinas are, like, aching from some of the stuff that I've seen in this vile series that you've recommended.
Well, that's one of the things I think the comic does well, is that he doesn't use it. He kind of makes a conscious decision not to use it wherever possible, because he sort of understands and comes to realise how powerful this, you know, special ability is. Well, I think in the TV show, they never really explore that as much. They kind of do, but they not to the extent in the comics. So I think I do kind of recall him kind of making a point of, no, we'll only use this when we really need to.
Yeah, that was kind of how they sort of hand-waved what otherwise, I guess, would be a pretty unstoppable power away. Although at points they use some funny devices, like, I don't know, you know, the villain claps his hands over his ears and goes, la, 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 so he can't hear the words. And that works. Yeah. So there's some quite funny, like, workarounds. But, well... You know, we're definitely not going to go over all the detail of the story.
No.
But what might be a good structure, I thought, was just to touch on some of the characters, because then you get a bit about the story. And some of the characters are just... I mean, there's one episode where the guy who did the painted covers has done, like, a big double-page spread of, like, every character. And they're just bonkers, aren't they? They're just, like, some of them are, like... They're pretty much all debauched, depraved... To some extent, well, they're all massively kind of flawed, but I suppose that makes them interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it gives us plenty to talk about anyway, doesn't it?
Well, maybe if we start with the what you might call the main characters. So you've got Preacher himself.
Jesse Custer.
Well, yes, the Reverend Jesse Custer. He's a bit, but I find him a bit annoying and boring, to be honest. What do you think?
See, I didn't mind him, and I don't remember ever really having that issue with him in the comic. I felt in the TV show he was weirdly played by Dominic Cooper. I'll probably go into the TV show a bit more later, but I found in the TV show he did kind of irritate me a little bit, but I didn't remember feeling that way in the comic.
Maybe it's just... that he's a bit of a, you know, he's a complete stereotype, and he's all kind of like, I'm an honourable Texan. He reminded me a bit of Joel in The Last of Us. You know what I mean? Just a little bit too good to be true. Well, Joel does some questionable things as well, but you know what I mean? Like this kind of all-American heartthrob. And then he's got a missus who stays with him throughout the comics, and they have their ups and downs and tribulations. Her name's Tulip. And she is a strong female character she sort of had like a failed career as like an assassin, so she's really good with guns.
Yeah.
Whereas Preacher, for other reasons in his backstory, he's really good at fist fighting. So they're a kind of capable, almost a bit of a Bonnie and Clyde type feel to them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Like nicking cars and, you know, misspent youth together, and then they separated and then they get back together again when he's a priest. But yeah, Tulip's all right. She's quite nice.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the thing the comic does very well, from memory, is really enforcing how much in love these two characters are and how far they'll go for each other.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Completely agree. To the point where, because I'm a horrible dick, I got at times I got a little bit sick of how in love they were with each other. But then, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, when you're in the presence of a couple who are very keen on each other, and you're a little bit like, oh, get a room, bloody hell. It was a bit like that at times, but equally nice that they were, you know what I mean? They didn't set that up and then have them betray each other and stab each other in the back. That love kind of was sustained throughout the whole series, which was quite interesting.
They kind of reminded me of... Clarence and Alabama from True Romance. I don't know if you've seen that.
I agree completely with that, actually. That's a good show.
To the point where it wouldn't surprise me if... Because that must have come out two, three years before Preacher. And it wouldn't surprise me if...
That was an influence. Because she was blonde as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Clarence Worley, if I remember that right.
Yeah.
That was Christian Slater, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and Patricia Arquette.
We've just watched the first series of Mr. Robot, which I know I'm years late to the blooming party, but it was good. Enjoyed it. Christian Slater's in that. not aged. He looks exactly the same as he did in Prince of Thieves.
He was in an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm a few years ago, and yeah, he just looked exactly the same. So
it's weird. I'm just jealous again. Yeah, he's cool. Yeah. I like Christian Slater. I don't know why.
Yeah, I like him as well. Cool. Yeah.
Why didn't they get him to play fucking Preacher? That would have been.
That would have worked. Better. That would have worked.
But anyway.
I could see that.
So Preacher and Tulip are thrust back together and rekindle their romance due to the events following the arrival of Genesis. They then pick up a Irish vampire called Cassidy. Who is not, and it's not like the story, it's not like he's a vampire because of some related event that also spawned Preacher. It's just, he's just a vampire. Like, he got bitten by a vampire 100 odd years ago, and he's been...
This world has vampires in it, yeah.
Just, shrug. But he starts off, I think, it's like he's clearly meant to be dead cool. He's got dark sunglasses on, and he's like a not arsed, sort of druggy, boozy, fuck it, let's fucking cause some trouble and I don't give a shit. And at first it's a little bit, all right, he's meant to be cool. This is a bit annoying. But I kind of grew to really like him over the course of the story until he goes a bit sour at the end.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think he... Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good comparison. He's just the sidekick character, but he is the one you kind of root for that reason you said. He's just quite cool. He's, especially when I read it, when I was, probably taking drugs and, having fun more than I am now, so...
And drinking people's blood.
So I looked at it like, this character's really cool, and... But there are a few twists with him as well. The TV show, actually, Cassidy, really well cast in that.
Yeah, that was the only positive thing I've got to say about this episode I watched, was I thought the bloke who played Cassidy was good. But
Really good, yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to think of a parallel. Because, like you say, he's ostensibly the sidekick to Preacher, but it's established that he's got superhuman vampire strength. And he could probably kick the shit out of Preacher quite easily if he wanted to. So there's a weird dynamic, isn't there? Like, Cassidy's along for the ride, fuck it, just for a laugh. And so there is a bit of an odd dynamic between the three of them.
I suppose the other weird thing as well is that prior to me reading Preacher, I'd never really seen vampires have mates.
Do you know what I mean? They're normally evil.
Yeah, they're normally by themselves or with other vampires, and they're, evil. But Cassidy was a vampire, but he was also like, if he liked you, he wouldn't kill you and drink your blood. So
fair dues.
I thought that was quite an interesting twist on it. I'm sure it's been done to death since. But
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And I think the comics do a good job of jumping around all over the place. So you'll get a story, it starts with the story of the three of them coming together and meeting each other. But then a couple of, you'll get a flashback and it'll be like all about Cassidy's past. And then you might get another one and it's all about Preacher's past. And it felt like an interesting bit of a tapestry, a really horrible flesh stitched together tapestry.
Yeah, definitely. I think there was a one volume in particular where I thought, the event seemed a bit unnecessary other than just to show you that time had passed.
Yeah.
But, other than that, I totally agree. I think the way it kind of flits between stories and backstories, it was done really well. It was quite exciting. It felt like it was a real fast-moving comic and, with lots going on and it all made sense and you'd never really grew bored. So, yeah, I agree with you there.
Completely unpredictable as well. Like, just no idea what... Well, those three are the main sort of the recurring good guy characters, albeit not entirely good, especially in Cassidy's case. Nope. But then there's just an array of other... So that the main antagonist who's in, I think, every volume, certainly, is a German bloke called Herr Starr. And he is brilliant, isn't he? Just what an absolute bastard he is. Oh my God, he is horrible, but in a weirdly likable way.
So probably by which point out, so in his pursuit of God, one of the kind of groups, Jesse and Tulip and Cassidy come across are the Grail.
Yes.
And they're kind of like a secret, all-powerful society, religious society. Well, they're kind of engineering the Second Coming, the apocalypse. Yeah, in the TV show, it's the apocalypse. But
no, that's exactly right. In the comics, it's they want to engineer an apocalypse, I think, in the year 2000. And the reason they want to do that is because they want to bring their, you know, Second Coming of Jesus guy to power. So they want to, you know, ruin the world and then bring a solution so everyone bows down and worships the new Christ. And the new Christ is a direct descendant of Jesus, because in the fiction, the Grail has been keeping Christ's bloodline alive by forcibly interbreeding all his relatives. So, in effect, what it means is the Second Coming of Jesus, you know, hundreds of years, thousands of years of inbreeding, is just like a gibbering simpleton who just, like, wanders around throwing poo at people and muttering rubbish, you know, a complete grinning, drooling moron. And that's what they want to put on the throne of, you know, the Earth. So, yeah, that's good. The Grail, well done.
And Star is the character. He's not in charge of the Grail. At this point, he's not the Allfather. That's a entirely different person this huge, huge fat bloke with bulimia who is just a real bastard as well.
If you imagine the Pope, if the Pope had force-fed himself like that bloke in Seven who dies from overeating, and if he was just sort of being escorted around, not really in a little Pope-mobile like the real Pope, but, you know, just that he had to be carried by the Grail's kind of foot soldiers because he's just so overweight and he can't walk. And all he seems to do is order people around and eat food and then throw it back up again. And just the Allfather is just a disgusting piece of work. But yeah, the Allfather and Star, the difference between them is the Allfather believes in the Grail and what it's trying to achieve with this descendant of Christ, even though it's evidently, he's not.
Clearly
a shit plan. And Star is a bit like kind of, am I the only person who can see this for what it is? Like, this is a terrible idea. So he's a religious man, and he believed originally in the Grail's purpose to bring order and structure to a chaotic world. But he, once he meets Jesus, his descendant, he's like, you know, sod this. So he wants to take over the Grail from within, kill off the big fat guy and the useless Jesus descendant, and replace them with someone else, a more credible messiah. And he sees Jesse Custer as that messiah because of his compelling power. Word of God power.
Exactly.
So that's the Star's deal. But yeah, he is.
So you see how it comes together there.
Sort of comes together. Loosely hangs together.
But Star, is definitely one of the standout characters. And in the TV show as well, he was really good.
I didn't see him.
He's like a sexual deviant as well, isn't he? And
he's very matter of fact. So he has these assistants called, what are their names?
Hoover and Featherstone.
Hoover and Featherstone. One's a bloke, one's a woman. And he just treats them like absolute garbage. And he's just like, you know, Hoover, you're an idiot. Get out of my face. Featherstone, do this now and order me a prostitute. And, you know, preferably one with a, you know, extendable, whatever. It's just very specific in his requirements. But, yeah. And he falls to bits over the course of the comics, because every time he encounters Preacher, he loses but gets away with his life. And I think he starts off with an eye missing already. He ends up losing his leg. I think he gets Custer slices a scar onto his bald head that makes his head look like a penis. So everyone just rinses him out about that for the remainder of the show. He gets his own penis eaten by a dog. So he just has a little tube with like a tap on.
gets
that fitted. We get a nice shot of that.
Fitted by cannibals. Right.
Yeah, fitted by cannibals, I think, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
And, he loses an ear as well. He gets one of his, which is the least of his worries, really, when you compare to those others. But he, you know, doesn't stop him. He's still determined to win. Any other thoughts on Hairstar?
Just his whole kind of matter-of-fact ways. And, yeah, he's just a very funny character, really. Probably the best character in the whole...
I like Cassidy, I like Star. The only other character who maybe is up there for possible best is, I really like the Saint of Killers as well.
Which, probably a good time to talk about Saint of Killers, another major, major character.
Yeah. Fire away.
So, the Saint of Killers...
Hey, that was a pun, actually. Sorry, wasn't it?
Ah, far away. Very good.
Thanks.
The Saint of Killers, his backstory is he was around in... it would have been the Civil War era?
Yeah, like in the sort of... Yeah, he's a sort of cowboy, in effect, isn't he? He was a, you know, American cowboy hat-wearing, six-shooter-toting kind of Texan... You know, he fought on the side of the Confederacy kind of thing.
He leaves his killing days behind when he, you know, starts a family. But his daughter becomes sick. So he, when he goes to get her some medicine, which was obviously like a massive, massive trek. By the time he gets back, they're already dead from bandits, because it's different in the TV show. Is that right?
You know, I think it was, yeah, in the graphic novels, it was. I think it's just that they've died of their illness, but he was waylaid en route by some bandits.
Yeah.
So he managed to, you know, slaughter a load of the bandits. And I think he took a detour to kind of like help a town, that some crappy little town called Ratwater, where the bandits are like holed up. And he went there to help them. And as a result, his wife and kid have died. So he goes back to get his revenge on, you know, this gang leader. And, it, you know, it's just a massive murder crusade.
And but he just kills everyone, doesn't he? Like,
he murders everyone in the town, not just the bandits. Exactly. He goes on a complete killing spree. It's a bit reminiscent of The Gunslinger, Stephen King's first Gunslinger novel, actually, that bit.
Yeah, yeah. I see that. Yeah, definitely. Anyway, so he's kind of hired by... See, this is where you're going to have to help me, because in the TV show, he's hired by some angels to track down Jesse Custer to stop him.
Yeah, no, that's right. So he dies in Ratwater at the hands of one of the criminals who gets the drop on him. So he goes to hell because he's a despicable murderous killer. And he's so ruthless, merciless, cold-hearted, and, you know, just done with, you know, he hasn't got a shred of remorse for what he's done, that hell freezes over.
That's right, yeah.
Cue Satan having to, like, you know, Satan starts beating him up and torturing him and telling him, you know, this can't, but this is unacceptable. And the culmination of that bit is that the Saint of Killers kills Satan. It's like shoots Satan dead. So in effect, he's tougher and harder and more evil than Satan. He gets put, I can't quite remember, but he ends up in some sort of buried, you know, in storage kind of situation. And yeah, the angels who are shitting themselves because they've allowed Genesis to escape from heaven, they dust him off and, you know, resurrect him to send him down to recover the goods. But it immediately backfires, and I think he shoots one of them dead and, you know, buggers off back to Earth.
So it is quite similar to the TV show, actually. A few differences, and it changes towards the end. But, yeah, that is quite similar, actually, to what happens in the TV show. And so, yeah, he's basically on Jesse Custer's trail for quite a lot of the series, isn't he?
Yeah, and he just... Again, it's like a character archetype we've seen in other things, you know, this like rock hard, Clint Eastwood style, grizzled, you know, man of few words, killer, cowboy kind of gun-toting. And he does have a few good lines, doesn't he? Like, I think there's a bit where to try to get rid of him, Star literally drops a nuke on him. And then, you know, it blows up this entire valley and nearly kills Preacher, who somehow escaped, kills loads of innocent people. It's all over the news, you know, unbelievable catastrophe. Cut back to the smoke, the mushroom clouds clearing, and the Saint of Killers is just stood there and he just goes, "Not enough gun." Which is quite funny.
Yeah, it's good. A little bit different in the TV show, but yeah.
Interesting.
Just a real badass. The ending is the same, though.
Okay.
We won't spoil the ending.
Yeah.
Shall we agree to that? We won't spoil the ending.
That's a good idea. Good idea. But of course, this conversation's making me want to watch the series now. But I just wasn't into that first episode at all. It just didn't do it for me.
I'll go through it in a bit, but yeah.
So there's one other character that I think, well, there's many others that we should mention probably, but there's one that we have to mention.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry, say that again. Oh my God.
Arseface.
Yes.
Yeah, tell us about Arseface, please, Liam.
So Arseface is, he was like a teenage boy. His dad is the sheriff of, it's Anvil, isn't it? He's from Preachers.
He is. Yeah, his dad's Sheriff Root.
Yeah, and his dad's real
absolute
piece of shit as well, isn't
scumbag,
he?
Racist, horrible
racist,
dick.
Yeah. And so Arseface, or he wasn't always Arseface. But this is just a teenage kid who's like into like grunge, and him and his mate kind of have like a suicide pact. They go to blow their brains out, Kurt Cobain style. The friend successfully kills himself. Arseface botches the job. I think he shoots himself, but he doesn't die. Instead, he's left like hideously scarred with, you know, a face that essentially looks like an anus.
And yeah, so a sad suicidal teenage boy whose failed attempted suicide results in him being horribly disfigured. Played for laughs
big
throughout
time.
Yeah. But it's the reason he does have a name. I forget what his real name is, but the reason he adopts the name Arseface, or as he pronounces it, is his dad is the guy who Preacher tells to go and fuck himself. So his dad, so he, having been told that he's got a face like an arse, I think he just decides to go on this like revenge crusade and become, you know, like almost like a supervillain. Like, I will become Arseface. But then the story doesn't go down that route at all. He doesn't end up being Jesse's nemesis. He has like a half-hearted attempt to kill him, realises he hasn't got the heart to do it because he's a nice person, and he goes on to have a successful multi-million pound rock singing career.
Until fans start to try and mimic him by shooting themselves, in which case he then gets screwed over by his manager.
Steals all his money.
And ends up shacked up with a one-eyed woman who we actually meet at a different point in the comic.
She's quite sweet.
Who can only, because of her one eye, which is a result of inbreeding, more inbreeding, sees him as like this really handsome, good-looking guy.
Yeah, it's basically implied that if you suffer from whatever condition she's allegedly got, you see things, your brain's trying to fill in the gaps from its limited optical input, and it might fill in the gaps incorrectly, so she thinks Arseface is really handsome.
And isn't there a bit as well where he, because this doesn't happen at all in the TV series like that, he's in it a lot actually, the TV series, but in isn't there a line where he says about the one-eyed woman, and he says something like, "Beggars can't be choosers. Beggars can't be choosers."
Yeah, Arseface says of his lovely missus, like, she sort of says something, doesn't she? Like, "Oh, why would a handsome man like you want to be with someone like
me?" Yeah, that's it.
You're expecting him to say, "Because you're beautiful, I don't care if you've got a, you know, one eye missing." But instead he says, "Beggars can't be choosers." Unbelievable.
But she can't hear him because nobody can really understand him because of his...
Bloody hell, Arseface.
Yeah, it's just, and like you said, it's just all played for laughs, isn't it? In the TV show, it's very different, though. The kind of backstory is similar, although in this instance, this girl that he really likes shoots herself. So he does it quickly, but he's kind of blamed for her doing it, even though it wasn't his fault at all. So it's like completely different that way. And Jesse actually sends him to hell. He says, "Go to hell, Eugene." Oh. And Eugene just disappears. And then that's kind of why he goes after Preacher.
Okay. Makes a bit of sense. Eugene, but that's his name, Eugene. Well done.
Eugene, yeah. But it's just completely different. And yeah, I don't know, but
in the show, the bit I saw, it's like he's not quite as like, you can kind of tell what he's saying, which I suppose makes sense because they can't caption it like they can in the comics. But I don't know, it didn't quite work for me how he was depicted in the show. It was a bit of a like an uncomfortable, like in the comics it's just offensive. You know, it's a horrible backstory, played for laughs, really inappropriate, and you're either willing to engage with that or stop reading.
I agree.
In the show, they're trying to, like, make that somehow modernised and politically correct, which to me is just kind of an impossible task.
I feel like they kind of were successful in that. Like, you do feel sympathy for him. He is genuinely one of the nicer characters, but he definitely outstays his welcome by the end of it, to the point where I think they even kind of reference it in the show, where he's talking to a priest and it's kind of like, why was he in it for so long? Like, what purpose did he serve after, you know, getting out of hell? They didn't do a great job with his character in the end. But I thought I thought his character was kind of reasonably well portrayed. But I take your point, though.
I did find myself really rooting for him in the comics, though. Like, I really wanted his music career to be successful. Like, he's singing Wonderwall and he's like...
Yeah.
That amused me. Bless him. The only other character I felt compelled to mention from my perspective was he was a little bit part villain. You know, when you've got a long-running comic series, you have to keep coming up with new villains, and he was in it briefly.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, Preacher ends up in this other town called Salvation for a bit. Which is ironic. Two of my books are set on an island called Salvation. So
That's right, there you go.
That's interesting. It's a bit different, though. Story's a bit different. Arseface is not in him. And the local tycoon, like scumbag, corrupt, old, miserly, you know, treating the townsfolk like garbage, he runs like a meat factory where he's making, like, you know, substandard, offal-based meat products. And I think is he just called the Meat Man? He's got a name, but...
So in the TV show, Odin Quincannon, I think his name is?
Odin Quincannon, that's it. Yeah, and he's like, old Odin didn't get to where he is today, blah, blah, blah. Little tiny, shriveled, you know, 80-year-old bloke with massive, you know, like thick jam jar glasses, so his eyes look really big.
Yeah.
And he's, so as well as just being horrible, he's got this thing where he keeps disappearing into one of his warehouses, and there's like guards, and they're like, don't come in. Mr. Odin says no one can come in. And you can hear like noises, or, you know, it depicts noises echoing from within, and he's like, oh yeah. And you're like, what the hell is going on in there? And then the big reveal is that he's made like a giant woman out of meat, like chickens and bits of ham and, you know, just offcuts of whatever carcasses into this like giant naked woman's body that he's...
Yeah.
I could have done without seeing that.
I think that for me was the point where it's like, what the fuck? Like... Like, when I read it, it's as I say, like, when I read it, it was just so unlike anything I'd ever seen before. And I think that shock factor is part of the appeal, especially when you're, you know, a bit younger and you like dark fiction like we do.
Yeah, correct.
You got sort of a bit cynical sense of humour. But that bit was like, you just see him, don't you, like, hugged up against this woman with his pants down, this giant, you know, 10-foot meat woman. And it's just... With a wig on,
like a ponytail or something. I can't remember.
It's just what the fuck.
And there's probably an element,
thinking,
especially if you were a teenager reading it. I guess there might have been an element of like, oh, I hope my mum doesn't see this. I'm gonna keep this.
Oh, totally.
I always imagine like, so then imagine your mum finds your secret stash of, you know, magazines under your bed. She's thinking, oh, here we go. This is gonna be pornography. What the? It's a guy with an arse for a face. What's he reading? What's wrong with my son?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's, you don't want to be caught. You don't want to read this on the bus or the tube, do you?
Yeah, you'd be absolutely ashamed.
This is an interesting thing, actually. So the Odin character, I didn't think he'd be in the TV show at all, but he's in the first season, played by Jackie Earle Haley, the guy from Watchmen and... the Freddy Krueger reboot.
Amazing. All right, then. I quite like him.
Yeah, so he's like a major character in the first season, only instead of... And it's completely different, the whole thing, you know, obviously, because he's in the first season. But he's still a bit of a tycoon, and he really wants to buy up all the land in their town. But the revelation, instead of, and how it comes about is different, instead of like a huge meat woman that he makes love to, because he lost his daughter, you end up seeing him cradling like this meat baby.
Jesus Christ.
Still really dark, but at least not, it's not as depraved as the other things.
Yeah, one of them is at least kind of sad. But still pretty grim. Imagine that conversation as well. Like, imagine being the preacher script people, like having that debate. Hey, do you think we can put the giant meat woman in with the wig on? Oh, I don't know. I think that's a bit offensive. Well, the whole thing's offensive. Well, what if we make it a meat baby? Yeah, then he's a more sympathetic character. Like, what? Why? How did they come up with that?
Oh, it's just crazy.
Oh, that's really funny.
But yeah, there's a whole Jesse's backstory with his grandma and her two henchmen. That's quite, in a TV show, that's like the basis of the third season. Okay. And I found it really boring. But in the comic, I quite enjoyed that backstory. And there's some good characters as well. They're proper like sort of redneck.
Evil redneck stereotypes.
Yeah.
One of them's like a big muscle man who's dead hard and beats Jesse up all the time. And one of them's this just a pervert who has sex with animals.
Yeah, with anything.
Yeah, like this, like even, and then you know when like, I was saying like there's, you know, a big double page spread of all the characters, and I think it's got them in the corner, like Jody and whatever the other guy's name is, and the other guy is just holding a fish, you know what I'm saying? That's, he's constantly got an animal with him, just in case. What a lovely fella.
It's TC, isn't it?
TC, that's his name, yeah.
Ugh. But in the TV show, he's almost, sort of, they've kind of almost tried to make him kind of likable. Like, he's more of a simpleton in this, as opposed to just being a real, like, piece of shit. He's just really loyal to the grandma, and he's a bit simple. And there is one bestiality moment, but that's not, like, his MO like it is in the comic. They kind of play him
as a sympathetic character.
Not even sympathetic, but almost like, you kind of like him, whilst definitely not in the comics.
But it's just like there's so many bits I just don't know how you would... Like, you know, the Allfather, like you say, bulimic. So immediately it's just offensive to anyone who's ever suffered with any sort of eating disorder. You'd probably get to this, you know, giant, you know, ludicrously fat bloke stuffing his face and throwing up everywhere and summoning his attendants to dab it, you know, wipe him down. Like, I don't have a clue. Does that happen in the series? Did they put that in?
Yeah, so he is in it. His makeup job, like the prosthetics, they don't look the best. It looks really fake.
Okay.
How fat he is. But I do seem to remember there being a bit where he makes himself, you know, puke up. So
I think
they actually, the TV show, they did quite a few things that I didn't think they would touch.
Which is a weird, I mean, it's a minefield, isn't it? But it is that old dilemma about sort of, you don't want people to be offended and alienated. So, you know, broadly, I approve of political correctness, and I think it's right for there to be a drive to kind of, you know, it's a bit of a blunt instrument at times, but it's to make the world more inclusive. But equally, I don't know, you don't want the world to just be really boring and without any humour. So I kind of am quite glad if they tackled a bit of that stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, even like the inbreeding, because especially, you know, this is an American production and how religious they are over there. With the kind of inbreeding of Christ's child,
and, offspring.
You know, having him in the TV show, he's like this kind of dancing fool, and he's actually quite, again, you quite like him. He's quite, well, not that you dislike him in that, he's just completely, but yeah, he's kind of, you do feel a bit sorry for him, and he's in it a lot more because he survives right to the end almost.
I mean, you make a really good point. I'm focusing on all this kind of like one aspect of the offensiveness or potential offensiveness of the material. But yeah, just religious people, particularly Christians.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
Oh my God. Like, you know, in America, much more so than the UK, I'd venture to suggest, is, you know, a Christian country. And I can't imagine this would go down well with a lot of that kind of audience. God himself does show up in the story and is a bit of a dick, isn't he?
And in the TV show, yeah, he's a massive dick, yeah. So yeah, it's quite surprising to some extent what they did, but yeah, it's nowhere near the level of the comic.
And is there anything else on the TV show in particular that you wanted to cover? Any major good points or failings?
I guess with the TV show mainly. So when I first read Preacher, I remember a friend of mine who kind of got me into it, a guy called Nick. We were I think even back then there were rumors that they were going to try and make a TV show of it, but it was one of those things where I just don't think it ever got off the ground because it's such a kind of a tough one to tackle. Same with you know, like Dark Tower, that's always kind of struggled, hasn't it, to get off the ground.
Yeah, it's been, and, well, I've not seen the film, but I heard enough bad things to lead me to kind of not.
Yeah,
not, I've read all the books, but yeah, and it'd be good to see that brought to life properly.
Yeah, but Wheel of Time is another one, yeah, which I know they are actually doing now. Even Lord of the Rings, before they had like mega budget to do it, was like one of those things that it was just really tough to.
Yeah, to catch
to kind of, yeah. And but I remember we were talking about it back in the day, and it was, for me, it was like really exciting, like the thought of having a Preacher TV show. It's like, God, that would be the best thing ever. But as the years went by, you know, when the Preacher show came out, I wasn't even that bothered about watching it, because I guess you just kind of change and you just kind of realize it probably won't be that good. And I think ultimately I was right. It starts slowly. It gets a little bit better. Like season one's okay, and season one's very different. And it's kind of like that thing we've talked about this before, where it's like it's really difficult to adapt things. So sometimes you kind of it's better to almost go a different direction.
Yes,
make it your own. And they do that in season one, and you kind of think, yeah, it was okay. And then season two, it kind of comes a bit more back around to the comic structure of them going after God, and that was probably the best season. But by the end of season four, maybe because I watched so many episodes, you know, in such quick succession, that I was maybe just a bit burnt out by it.
Yeah,
it was a struggle. It was a struggle to finish it in the end. Even though, in fairness, the final episode, they did finish it off quite well.
Oh, interesting. And yeah, at least going into it, I suppose, if anybody was compelled to check out the show, it's four seasons and done, you know, it's finished.
Yes.
So it's always good to know, isn't it, that you're in for a
absolutely
final
period,
and that it did end, you know, it didn't get cancelled halfway through or, you know, anything like that.
And there is some pretty good casting in it, like some of, like, stars really good. Featherstone and Hoover were both really good in it. Tulip was really good in the show. Saint of Killers was pretty good. So, yeah, you know, generally they did an okay job, but it just, I don't know, by the end of it, I was kind of done.
Was that bloke in it? I'm just picking up one of the things now, flicking through. And do you remember Cassidy's mate, who's like a reporter or something, but then he turns out to be a serial killer?
No.
And it shows he's got some, I don't know whether it's a policeman who he's trying to catch him, but he's caught the policeman and he's like, tying him into a chair or whatever, and then you're seeing it from the policeman's point of view. Anyway, the reveal is he's cut this poor bloke's face off and then nailed it back on upside down. Do you remember that?
Just, fucking
God,
hell, yeah.
Jesus Christ. And then I think, I keep going on about this, but in that double page spread of all the characters, he's that bloke with the upside down face is in it. You know, as if he just went on with his life looking like that.
Yeah, no, he's not in it at all. You do get, in the TV show, Cassidy's son, who's like this kind of elderly French guy in New Orleans.
Because he's not a vampire. Cassidy, because obviously vampires don't age, right? Okay.
But Cassidy eventually turns him into a vampire because he's ill and dying.
Oh.
And then he turns out to be a real arsehole vampire, so Cassidy has to kill him.
Okay.
That was quite good.
Okay.
He was quite good in it, but...
It definitely, whether this is unfair to the writers, but it definitely, the comics gave me the impression that they were just making it up as they went along, just winging it, whatever daft idea they had, sod it, let's just chuck that in, that'll be funny. And I quite like that. I think that's quite a cool way to write something.
Yeah, because, I mean, it kind of makes sense in the context of it, because they are going on a journey. It's not like they're just going to drive somewhere, you don't see anything, they're there and they confront God and it's all over with. You know, they're hanging out with a vampire, they've got a guy with the power of God, they've got these people after them, so they are going to get some into some crazy hijinks, aren't
they?
So
that is what,
you know,
if you,
I'll let it go.
If you like crazy hijinks, this is the series for you.
But yeah, just really fucking dark and shocking and
yeah, I mean
funny, yeah, funny at times.
Yeah, if you've got a certain sense of humour, you'll find it funny. If you haven't, you'll hate it.
One thing that you did mention earlier on when you were reading is kind of how it was a bit of a product of its time in terms of sort of political. I know we kind of mentioned political correctness, but the way it kind of depicts homosexuality and whatnot, you kind of felt like some of it was a little bit dated.
Oh yeah, well, definitely. Like as in, it, there are some elements that in effect they weren't intended to be, I'm sure, at the time, but they are in effect homophobic. It's quite sexist in parts. I think it thought it was being very progressive at the time.
Yeah,
but it isn't really.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I guess I thought that when I read it, I didn't feel like it was, you know, it's really kind of right wing.
No, and no, it's not setting out to be either right wing or nasty or in any way kind of bigoted. Or at least my reading of it is, it's not trying to be like that. It's trying to be the opposite, but it just is, you know, a clunky, dated text from 25 years ago, and we know what that's interesting. You know, we all remember how, for example, how women were portrayed in the 90s. You know, it was all just sexualized all over the place, so it does read like a product of its time. So I don't blame the TV show for trying to update it. I'm sort of surprised they even tried. So yeah, interesting to see what came of it. But yeah, sounds like it. Ultimately, regardless of any other issue, you need a TV show to be entertaining to watch, and it sounds like it was a bit hit and miss.
It was hit and miss. Yeah, it was hit and miss. It's funny, though. I wonder if it would have been better if the TV show had been made, you know, 20 years ago. Or, I don't know.
I guess when you read it, you were a teenager, so it's all like, whoa, blood and guts and sex and stuff. You know, like when we all played Mortal Kombat for the first time and it was like, oh my God, I can pull a guy's spine out. And then you get older and in theory you grow out of that stuff, although I seem to have regressed. And so do you. So actually that's...
Me and my licorice all sorts with a peg to death.
We're more childish than we've ever been. Well, Liam, are there any other aspects of Preacher that you feel we have not adequately covered?
No, I mean, it's a difficult one to cover purely, because there's so much going on. There's so many characters you could talk about, so many little moments. But I think broadly speaking, you know, we gave you an outline. And if you do like, if you think you can stomach it, if you think you'll find it funny, you know, if you're not easily offended, then I think you'll enjoy it.
Sorry, I interrupted you then. I was just going to say, yeah, but it's definitely not for the easily offended. And it's gratuitous. Like, I was flicking through it then. There's a bit where the Grail get Cassidy because they're using him as bait to attract Preacher. And they're torturing him by basically keeping him in a sort of pit and just shooting him with a sniper rifle, just blowing. It all grows back because he's a vampire, so he regenerates slowly, but he still feels the pain of being shot with a sniper rifle in the eye and in the leg. And so that's grim and graphic. And then just for absolutely no reason, it's not relevant to the plot, not necessary, the guy who's shooting him is like a stereotype mafia mobster. He's like, I'm gonna take my frustrations out on you, asshole. Because he has lost his penis in some sort of accident. Like a territory war. He's had his own willy chopped off. And he's constantly moaning about his, like, colostomy bag. Like, just, there's no need for that for that detail. But they just put it in anyway. So
I had completely forgotten about that, but the same character is in the TV show and he does torture Cassidy, but instead of shooting him, he tortures him by cutting Cassidy's dick off every day in front of a class of Grail students who are learning about torture.
Because it'll grow back, because it grows back on a daily basis. Exactly. All right, yeah, okay, that sort of works. Poor Cassidy. Vampire life. Maybe it's not as cool as we all thought it was.
No. Oh, and we're not obviously going to mention the ending, but one more thing about the TV show, actually, that I noticed. What we said earlier, how good a job they did of showing how much in love Tulip and Jesse are in the comics. But in the TV show, I didn't get that. And in the TV show, it's played more as a bit of a love triangle between Tulip, Cassidy and Jesse, because I think Tulip and Cassidy's chemistry just seemed to be a bit better. And I wonder if it was an audible they called during the filming where they were like, oh, actually, let's not do what they did with Cassidy in the comic and let's make it more of a, you know, will they, won't they kind of love triangle thing. And the same goes for Jesse and Cassidy. Their friendship in the comic book is really strong, and initially in the TV show it is, but there's like a whole season and a half where they pretty much just don't like each other. And so it just makes it hard, I guess, to, you just don't get that camaraderie that like you do, and you don't get the kind of sense of their love like you do in the comic book, which was another reason why I don't think it's as successful, because the stakes don't feel as high, maybe.
Good vampire pun, just to close on there.
Very well done. Unintentional.
But no, it's interesting how that can misfire. And maybe that's not necessarily entirely the fault of the scriptwriter or the director. Maybe there's an element of just the casting didn't quite, you know, all these elements that add up to compelling, believable chemistry and friendships on screen. Sometimes it adds up to less so, and it, didn't quite come off. Liam, you have pitched Preacher, a sick, depraved, disgusting, highly, highly offensive, gratuitous, gore-drenched, multiple penis-related injuries-packed story. You are a sick man, and I need you to justify your selection with a summary of your pitch. I see what you're saying, and it's a pretty convincing argument, to be fair. On that basis, I'm going to allow a Preacher into the Hall of Pain.
I think it's deserving of a place. I think it certainly does. It needs to be hidden and locked away.
Yeah, like a
deep underground
high security wing for really sick stuff next to Berserk.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll get on well.
Basically, two episodes in a row that we've done together where I'm mildly worried we're going to get complaints and, you know, shut down by whoever polices podcasts. But, oh well, let's see what happens.
Hey, we didn't write it. Yeah, fucking hell, we didn't write it.
Exactly. Send your hate mail to Garth Ennis.
Yeah.
But now he's going to sue us as well. Oh, shit. This is a downward spiral. Anything else you wanted to cover? Did you finish your all sorts?
No, it's just the plain licorice ones left, where they're, you know, they're just licorice tubes, which I don't really like. So I've finished what I've wanted.
The pink ones.
Yeah, they're nice.
The pink speckly ones, yeah. Or the round ones that are like a circle of one colour and then it... Oh, I've not had my tea yet. I've got a pie. I'm having pie for tea. Got a pie in the freezer.
Oh, nice.
A bit like meat one.
Oh, God.
Just omni meat, like, I think.
Bloody Quinn Cannon.
That's good. On which unsavoury, savoury note, we will cease this recording and see you all again soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening, everyone. And if you've made it this far without being so offended you had to turn off the show, then well done. If you were horribly offended, then please send all legal correspondence and hate mail to Liam's home address, which is... yes, if you did enjoy the show by some miracle, then please do leave us a positive rating. 5-star reviews, always appreciated. Or get in touch with us via social media. We are on Twitter at @dark_natter, or you can find us on Instagram at @darknatterpodcast. And I think that's it. Thanks again. Look forward to speaking darkly towards you in the very near future. Goodbye.